This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited to have today Mark Trischuk. He is a partner at Cedar Coast, which is a law firm in the Lower Mainland. And we brought Mark on the program today because we've been dancing around the topic.
Yeah, it's been an elephant in many of the podcast rooms.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It is clearly the what's happened recently with changes to the Residential Tenancy Act and how that is playing out on the ground has been a topic of conversation in our industry, just in general, right? With other agents and with clients of ours. And clearly lots of landlords are struggling, basically trying to understand what the new rules are and how that impacts their relationship with their tenants. And I think a lot of tenants are maybe in the dark as well related to their rights as a tenant. So who better than Mark Trischuk to join us today to unpack everything and talk about how to protect yourself on both sides?
That's exactly right. I mean, you want to do right by your tenant or do right by your landlord. You want to be on the right side of the rules and you don't want to find yourself in the daily hive. You don't want any of those things, you should be listening to our talk with Mark. This is fantastic. We basically just quiz him on all sorts of questions that we face on the regular and a wealth of knowledge, really bright guy. It's great having Mark on the show.
Yeah, and a fantastic five wire. Matt, before we get to that, of course, we've got a new segment sponsored by Scalina Real Estate. The new segment is we're merging trivia in Vancouver and Vancouver real estate. Still remains nameless. Do you have a question? Is it me again? I feel like
I have a question for you. Now, here's the thing. I feel like this is potentially too easy. But you know what? You've surprised me in the past.
How stupid I am.
You know what? I'm gonna call an audible. I'm gonna call an audible right at the end here. What Vancouver restaurant chain claims to have invented the modern Caesar cocktail? This was a surprise to me.
White Spot.
No, that was quick. But Adam, before we give the answer, we should highlight one of our listings have over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Of course, we feature all of Scalina Real Estate's featured listings at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And this week, I wanted to highlight 495 West 29th. That is right at the corner of Cambie and 29th. Looking into Queen Elizabeth Park, I feel like there's almost not a better location in the city. You're right near Cambie Village. You're a straight shot to YVR. You're a straight shot into downtown. The building, Park Elise, is from 2019. This is a two-bed.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, it's a two-bed, two-bath townhome. You walk out right into it feels like you're walking into Queen Elizabeth Park, honestly.
Yeah.
And it has a generous balcony off of the primary bedroom where you're literally staring into lush greenery. So it doesn't get much better than this. Just over 1,100 square feet, two parking, air conditioning, offered at 13299. And while you're there, Adam, you're going to want to click sell with us. So you're going to want to go look at 495 West 29th. Then you're going to want to click sell with us where you can download the infamous sold plan. Adam, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the sold plan?
Yeah, but first, Matt, I think a prominent figure in Vancouver real estate called the Cambie Corridor, the Mayfair to London, basically. So I feel like that is such a good spot. That is
really,
I mean, you can't beat ground-oriented living in the Canby Corridor. That's fantastic. Great listing. Yeah, I will tell you about the sold plan. Sold plan stands for start on launch date. So you select when you want to list your property and it gives you a step-by-step guide for the weeks leading up to your list date. And this is based on, you know, hundreds of homes being sold, 15 years of selling real estate in the Lower Mainland. Some serious tips and tricks in this guide. It's free. It's available at our site. It's an instant download. Just click sell with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Matt, I screamed white spot so quickly there. And it was because I feel like white spot is funny.
It's your favorite restaurant.
It's a good spot. But yeah, I feel like white spot stands out as like a uniquely Vancouver chain.
That's right. Yeah. No, it was a good guess. It's definitely wrong. Another quiz question would be, has White Spot made more selling burgers or on their real estate? And in the end, I think it's probably their real estate, although we can't confirm that right now. But no, I can give you the answer. So the question for those who have forgotten, what Vancouver restaurant chain claims to have invented the modern Caesar cocktail? It's a little unclear what the traditional Caesar cocktail was, but the answer, Adam, the Keg.
What?
Yes, I feel like a lot of people have forgotten that the Keg was a Metro Vancouver restaurant. The first Keg was actually in North Vancouver, Adam. I should have just led with that. Where was the first Keg? But yeah, the Keg invented the modern Caesar, or at least they claim they did.
Interesting. I'm just looking. It was, George Tidball. He did the Keg. He brought, I guess, he was instrumental in bringing McDonald's to Canada in 1967. First location of McDonald's in Canada, Richmond.
Wow. Okay, you should have saved that for next week.
Well, just do restaurant chains. Anyways, Matt, we gotta cut to this conversation because it's a great one. Mark Trischuk, partner, Cedar Coast. Can't wait.
This is something everybody should listen to. There's no one that won't benefit from this conversation. So enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced, Nordic-inspired design for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior 1 to 3 bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's marcon.ca/soenehaus, or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park, a simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's central downtown plaza. This is the time and the place to invest. Register at marcon.ca/102andpark. That's marcon.ca/102andpark.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Mark Trischuk. He is the partner at Cedar Coast Law Group. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time, Mark. I almost said past guest fan favorite, but you haven't
it's
been
just
on the show.
Your world.
I was going to say, but we met years ago through the podcast, so it's exciting to finally get you on the show.
Yeah, no, I feel like a longtime listener, first time caller. You know, I started listening to the podcast 2016 when you guys first started. I remember you were trying things out. You had a new theme song. New intros, fun stuff like that. But I really appreciated the guests you guys had on the tips you think you had for how to view Strata documents. So it was really helpful. It really helped in my own purchase. And to think that this episode might help someone like my past self, it's amazing. Really happy to be here.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, we don't do as many tips as we did in the early days. We should probably go back to that. But this episode kind of is in that vein for sure.
You made me think about the brief encounter with dubstep that we had with
I feel like we've had more than one segment
I'm cringing on
canceled yeah, as well.
Exactly. No, that's great. Maybe it's to start things off here, Mark. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a partner at Cedar Coast Law Group in Vancouver, originally from Saskatoon, prairies like you guys. My dad was a realtor for over 40 years. You know, never let anybody tell you have to retire. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. And he also had a small rental property, and I would get dragged into helping out, you like mowing lawn or shoveling snow when I was a kid. And so real estate's always been an industry I've been familiar with, even if I didn't go into it myself. As I mentioned, I'm a partner at Cedar Coast Law Group in Vancouver. I've been here my entire career. I started back when it was called AMJ Law, and then the A and the M and the J all retired. they decided to pass the firm on to myself and then the two other partners. And we decided to continue on with this legacy. We renamed it Cedar Coast Law Group. And it's been fantastic. Work with really great people. And I feel lucky to do the kind of work that I love, which is helping people solve problems.
Well, yeah, that's great, Mark. So maybe as a first question for you here, of course, we brought you on to talk about landlord-tenant issues and how to navigate the sometimes easy and sometimes tricky relationships that emerge. So what are the key rules in your mind every landlord and tenant should be aware of at the start of a lease agreement?
I'll start with kind of the usual blurb that lawyers do, right? That this is not legal advice. And if you have questions about specific situation, you should reach out, either contact my office or get independent legal advice. But I found the number one hangup for landlords is if you don't do the initial inspection and fill out the inspection report, you can't keep the security deposit. And so time and time again, I get questions about, oh, my tenants caused damage. Can I keep any of the money? And when I ask to see the initial walkthrough inspection report, there isn't one. It's always a problem. For tenants, with a big issue I see a lot, other than, you know, getting their landlord to repair stuff, which I'm not touching, is an understanding of what's a fixed portion and what's a month-to-month style lease. And so the understanding has to be that if you're in that first year or 2 years or what have you, whatever that fixed portion of the lease is, you're obligated to pay that rent. And if you leave, the landlord can make a claim against you for the time it takes to find a new tenant and while the unit sits empty. It's an oversimplification, but it's an important thing to remember. If I can give a suggestion on that, it's talk to your landlord early. Say, hey, something has happened in my life. I may need to move out. I wanted to give you a few months notice so you can find someone rather than saying, hey, I'm gone in 5 days. You know, people need time to get things organized.
And I think for a lot of potentially landlords listening, they might be surprised that they can go after their tenants for damages in those situations, because I feel like there's a common understanding that, you know, oh, I can potentially hold back some of the damage deposit in that scenario, but it's, you know, if the tenant's gone, the tenant's gone. But you can actually, there is an ability to be compensated for that lost rent.
Yeah. As a landlord, you also have the obligation to try and find a new person as soon as possible, right? And if your unit's sitting empty for 1 month or 2 months, yeah, you can make a claim for that. And it's up to you to decide whether that's worth it for you to go to the residential tenancy branch or write it off as a cost of doing business.
Yeah, and I'm guessing with the vacancy rate being so low in Metro Vancouver that a lot of landlords, when they lose their tenant, they over the years, they've probably seen it as an opportunity to either increase the rent or maybe not worth the hassle of actually going after a tenant moving on. But I mean, that could definitely change, I'm guessing, in less buoyant rental markets, maybe like the one we're in.
Exactly, exactly.
And just to go back to the other common error. So if I understand, in that situation, the landlord does a walkthrough at the end of the tenancy, realizes there's some some damage that they want to be compensated for. But if that's not literally, if that's not documented at the start on the inspection report, then you're basically out of luck.
Yeah, there's that standard form that the residential tenancy branch makes you use, and the tenant has to sign that they've gone through the walkthrough with you. And if you don't have that, basically the act says you're not entitled to keep any part of the damage deposit. It's a tough spot if you don't do it. And I think most people don't.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's probably because of, you know, all relationships usually start positively. and you can overlook that in that situation, I'd imagine.
What about, Mark, just thinking about the rules around ending a tenancy? So lots of landlords listen to the show. Can, you know, whether you're taking back the property or selling it to an end user, can you talk a little bit about the rules of ending a tenancy that I guess is now month to month?
In general, when a landlord is using an eviction process for their own use, it has to be in good faith, right? You have to honestly intend to live there. And a new regulation that's coming soon is that the government intends to really narrow that definition of a landlord's quote-unquote own use. Before, a common one was, I'm just going to use it for my storage, or I'm going to, you know, put some boxes there. And that option will be removed when the new regulations come in at some date undetermined in the future. It will soon be limited to if you, your child, or your spouse will be moving in to live there. And that's it. The other type it's used often is if a purchaser intends to live there, that they have to, again, have to be moving there and using it as their primary residence. You can't just say this person's going to purchase it and use it for storage or something else. Specifically for that process, if where you're selling it and the buyer intends to move in, there's a few more things you really need to know. Make sure that you, as the seller and the landlord, can qualify to use the process. And that means you can't be in the fixed term portion of a lease. You know, some leases are starting as a fixed 12-month lease and then it goes month to month afterwards or for some period like that. If you're in that first 12 months, you can't sell it. You cannot sell it and have the tenant move out. So it really is a really harsh limitation, and you need to keep in mind, because you can really get in trouble. You might have to tell the buyer, oh, sorry, I can't deliver this with clear possession. The other part to remember is you really need to negotiate a long closing. There's a minimum 3 months to have between when you give your tenant notice and when the purchase date happens. And that can be more of sort of mid-month. It's 3 clear months. So you can't actually serve it on the first of the month. It has to be the last day of the month before. And if you serve it on the first of the month, suddenly you have to give 4 months' notice. And so you really have to give yourself as much wiggle room as you can if you're making an eviction application to give clear possession to a new buyer. You really want to give yourself as much wiggle room as possible 4 days later, 5 days later in terms of extra possession. But it might not always work, right? You have that 90-day limit for a mortgage approval. And so it's a bit of a tight spot, even with the changes to the regulations made by the government in the fall.
So really, just to clarify something for listeners. So if you own a property that's tenanted and you have a fixed lease in place, really, it sounds like you have two options. You either will have to sell it to an investor who then inherits that tenant, right? So the end user option, some buying it to use it themselves, is off the table. Unless they're going to do a long close and wait for that fixed tenancy to expire. Or alternatively, I guess there's the option of a mutual agreement to end tenancy, which would be very probably onerous and costly for a seller or a landlord to actually engage in with a tenant.
Yeah, exactly. You have to make sure that you know when that fixed portion is over, because if that fixed portion of the lease is still going, you can't use this process to evict the tenant on behalf of the buyer and give them clear possession. You know, it's not something that's within the law. It's really a specific exception to the regular Tenancy Act provisions here that you're trying to take advantage of.
Yeah, it is a common misconception, because I think a lot of people reach out and they say, well, I have a tenanted property, but we're selling, so clearly I can give the tenant notice. And they think it has to do with the act of selling, which
clearly goes against the... Yeah, that they're not the owner anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Which goes against the Residential Tenancy Act. So no, that's a really good point. How do addendums tie into leases, and what are valid or invalid items that you can include in addendums?
The fun part about addendums is that you can put almost anything you want in there, but there's a few things you can't put in, which is basically contracting out of what the Residential Tenancy Act or some other law says. So you can ask the tenant to do all sorts of things like pay the utilities, shovel the sidewalk, even watering the flowers. But you can't contract out of things like the Residential Tenancy Act or its requirements or something else like the Human Rights Act. Like we were just discussing, you can't contract out of that 3-month notice for an eviction to give possession to a new buyer. It's something that you can't do. But there's lots of other things you can do in terms of addendums. A common one, for example, is not growing marijuana in the unit, because that can definitely get you in trouble with your mortgage company if you have one, or not making unauthorized renovations, that sort of stuff. So you can really get creative, and we have some standard things that we like to put in leases. But again, you just have to make sure you're not trying to do a runaround on what the Act says.
Yeah, and when you say contract out, you're basically circumventing the Residential Tenancy Act through some elaborate addendum at the end of the lease.
Exactly. The government doesn't take a very positive view of that. So if you try and put something like that in an addendum clause, it's just considered void and unenforceable.
What if I don't want children or pets in my unit? And, you know, I'm asking this specifically because this is very common that you hear people say, well, I don't want to rent to people with, like, to young families. And a lot of young families feel like they're discriminated against in the rental process. And again, with pet owners.
Absolutely. Pets are one thing. You know, during the last election, we heard the government might remove the restriction on pets in dedicated rental buildings. But for a private landlord who's just renting out their basement suite or a unit they have in a condo building, yeah, you can still require that no pets be allowed as part of the residential tenancy. Children, it's tougher, right? Because as the regulations were, again, prior to the last election, in theory, a child is a quote-unquote additional person and would prompt the need to renegotiate and have a brand new lease. But again, that's changing soon as well. They're going to change the regulations so that if you have a child, you can't, as a landlord, say to the tenant that you have to move out or that you have to pay more rent, something like that. Definitely a challenge, because it doesn't actually protect against kind of the inherent biases. As soon as you show up to an open house with a kid in tow, the landlord's still going to look at that and say, I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough situation for those people.
Is there a most common mistake you come across in your practice, Mark? Or at what point and over what are you most often engaged?
I think the most common mistake is coming to us too late. I can't give you the best options if you haven't done the notice properly, or tenant has disputed the notice and there's 4 days to a closing. It's really a challenge to get sorted out. We always say, come to us early. Yeah, everyone hates lawyer fees, but I can give you a lot better options early on in the process when it's you have lots of different things to take into account, rather than, oh no, everything's got to happen in 3 days. It's really a challenge.
Or sorry, I just wanted to just clarify here, Mark. If somebody out there is, you know, potentially either buying a property that's tenanted or is selling a property that is tenanted, and they want to use a lawyer for conveyancing, like, would you say in that case as well, it's like, okay, engage your lawyer that you're going to use for conveyancing very early, and potentially they can help along with the process?
Absolutely. We're always happy to help in that sort of process. And we can give you tips about how to make things move more efficiently, things to look out for in terms of pitfalls. It really helps to get us in there early so we can help you almost craft some portions of the contract even, and make sure that you have all the documents required so that either you're buying or purchasing in a way that you're confident the deal will move smoothly. It's really a bonus to come to us early in the process.
It's funny. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people listening to this program who are consistently engaging lawyers and accountants for all processes of their life, right? But I'm just thinking there's also the people that are hesitant because of legal fees or accounting fees to engage. But I mean, after watching, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of transactions over the past 15 years, I can tell you the people that are moving through the market in the best way possible are the ones who are willing to engage the correct services, and it ends up saving them in the long run, which is a huge thing. So this is more of a vote to build a team and to get lawyers and accountants on your side, because that always ends with the best result.
Can you talk about the process when there is a dispute, Mark, between landlord and tenant? So basically, like, what are the steps when there's a dispute, and what does the timeline look like? And maybe in more ways than one, but I'm actually thinking or most interested in the timeline when there's a contract of purchase and sale involved. But yeah, maybe I'll leave it open at first.
So this is a long answer. And the theme running through it is preparation is key. It's key for two reasons. One, because you'll be thankful if the worst happens. And two, letting the other side know that you're prepared means they might be less likely to cause problems if the outcome's more certain. In general, for example, if the landlord use is the reason that you're going for an eviction, landlord's not having evidence to show it'll be occupied by a family member, or, you know, they're going to use it for one of the approved uses, is one of the biggest factors the residential tenancy branch focuses on. And the landlords, they're the one who has to prove that they're going to use it for that own use. And when they don't, it goes really poorly. That's why getting your ducks in a row is really key. But for that situation you're talking about, Matt, where a buyer's moving in, you have to give clear notice to the tenant that they have to move out after 3 months. They have 3 weeks to dispute that notice with the residential tenancy branch. In general, I've seen more than once where a tenant's dispute has been dismissed because they didn't file it in time. You know, there's that article in the news a while ago where the judge said during an appeal that there has to be extraordinary circumstances in order to have that time limit waived. And if a tenant can't show extraordinary circumstances, think like, you know, an earthquake, or they're in the hospital and weren't home, without that, they're not going to get that time limit extended. It's a really, really tight deadline. If a tenant does file a dispute in that example, that doesn't automatically mean the sale will get delayed. To the government's credit, they've hired more staff, the residential tenancy branch. Hearings have sped up. You know, recent ones have been done in just over a month. I think you're going to expect most hearings for that 3-month notice to end tenancy to happen about 8 to 10 weeks after the first notice to the tenant. The residential tenancy branch is mindful of these things, and they'll try and schedule your hearing before the closing date. It might be close to that closing date, but it'll usually happen before the closing date. Keyword usually, perhaps. Now, the tenant and landlord have both gotten notice of the dispute, and you upload your evidence to the branch's website. For the seller, if you're the person who has to give clear possession to the buyer, that would be your accepted contract, the written request from the buyer, and the proof of service on the tenant. If those steps are done properly and they have the things that they're supposed to have in them, it'll be really difficult for a tenant to dispute that notice. Most of the landlord use eviction notices are rejected by the residential tenancy branch because of procedural issues like the wrong form, not enough notice, or not having that evidence I was talking about earlier. That's why preparation is key. Before the hearing, the landlord and the tenant send the evidence to each other 2 weeks beforehand, and then the hearing itself is by phone. They're usually not that long, maybe 15 minutes to an hour. And they just involve going through the documents you have uploaded and making arguments to the adjudicator. Once that's done, you know, they have 30 days to prepare a decision, which they send to you. Now, everybody thinks the process kind of ends there. Not necessarily. You've gone through the process. You were successful. Great. You have a decision. That just means you can barge in and change the locks, right? Not quite. Ideally, the person who received the eviction order will just comply and move out. But if that's not the case, the landlord has to hire a bailiff, which is the only person which has the legal authority to actually go in and force the tenant to leave. And this is usually dramatic and stressful and potentially dangerous do not do this on your own. You know, it's not like Hollywood where it's solved by a dance off or, you know, who snaps along, right? This can be scary. It can be scary stuff. But to get the bailiff to do it for you, you have to get that residential tenancy branch order entered at BC Supreme Court, and then the judge issues a writ of possession. And this is basically the final step in getting the tenant removed. You know, the bailiff will come, attend the home, do what's necessary to have them leave. And once that's done, you can go in and change the locks. And there's always fees for all these steps too. There's always fees with every step I've mentioned.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Events Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
I just want to point out, Adam, you've been a witness to that process, the dance-off. Oh. But you've had a bailiff. A bailiffs have been involved in some of your transactions.
And removing me for dancing? Really? I'm trying to think.
I have.
I'm sorry. That was years ago.
I remember your life
years ago.
Better
it's
than you.
Never was... a ni- it's, never, it's never a nice... you're right. You're right, Mark. It's the last resort for a reason. It's kind of a very horrible experience, I think, for all parties involved. And but at some points, it becomes the only way.
Yeah, it's tough. It's not something you want to go through. It's long, it's hard, and it's expensive. A common misconception is that you can call the police for these things, and the police will come, but they won't help you. They won't help with non-criminal matters where it's a residential tenancy dispute. They'll be happy to attend, but they'll basically just stand on the sidewalk and watch while the bailiff does the work. They're basically there to keep the peace, not do the actual removal itself. Then I think the silver lining is this is rare, right? This is terrible and dramatic, but it doesn't happen that often. Usually people are reasonable, even if they're unhappy. But I think that's where some support and some help from the seller or the landlord can really go a long way. You know, helping them find a place, helping them to coordinate with the move, you know, buying the pizza and the drinks for people who come help move out that day. You know, it really goes a long way in preventing those stubborn, irrational, hard-nosed refusals to leave, which make life really difficult for everyone. And I think that's maybe where lawyers actually have the most value. We can see the worst case scenario and we can help you guide you through it, but the end of the day, we're kind of in the people business. And I think we're at our best when we can help address people's key needs on both sides, rather than necessarily forcing it to the worst outcome. That's where we're at our best, I think.
I just had two questions going back, Mark. One is, that process of going to the residential tenancy branch and having arbitration is undoubtedly stressful, but actually, so I guess two things. One is, if you are doing everything right and dot all the I's, cross all the T's, you can still not know if a tenant disputes up until, say, close to 2 weeks before completion, or even potentially if there's a backlog until after the completion date. Like, there's no guarantee that that can be sorted out prior to completion, if I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you're left there wondering what's going to happen. And I think that's also one of the biggest risks too, is that you get something wrong. The requirements for an eviction where there's no fault, you know, you're not evicting a tenant because they're causing problems. The rules are very technical and very stringent. Residential tenancy branch takes those evictions really seriously. And so if you don't do it exactly correct, you know, there's a good chance your eviction request will get thrown out. And even if you do everything correct, yeah, you're sitting there waiting, thinking, what if? What if? Not my favorite position to be in.
No kidding, but one that is basically entirely outside of your control in certain situations. I like the idea of, if I'm, you know, just paraphrasing you from earlier, essentially mitigating risk through being hyper-organized, working with somebody like yourself to make sure that everything is dialed and it's basically airtight. One thing that stands out though is that timeline where, you know, you mentioned they're moving pretty quick right now, you know, sometimes under a month. But what happens, I guess, from a legal standpoint, if you've done everything right and you can't provide vacant possession because you're waiting on an arbitration that will likely be thrown out in 10 minutes in a phone call? I'm not thinking that happens very often, but is there any way to mitigate against that?
And thinking about, and just to kind of add on that, is maybe the tenant feels wrong, but maybe they also wrong, but also maybe there's someone who's maybe opportunistic and realizes that if they fudge a sale or if they get close to a completion, that there might be the potential of a buyout, which we've seen in this marketplace.
And for more than pizza and a couple of drinks.
In theory, absolutely, right? In theory, if you can't deliver clear possession on closing day, the buyer in theory could walk away, right? You haven't upheld your part of the contract. And is it something that's going to happen very often? Not really. Because, you know, if you're dealing with good people, you know, people will get together and they'll make it work out, right? But yeah, in theory, the entire thing could go sideways. The decisions that I've seen so far from the residential tenancy branch, and perhaps, you know, because when we do them, we're helping sellers out. We don't come to that scenario very often at all. But even when people have to go to the residential tenancy branch to deliver a clear title to a purchaser, the landlord has been successful. They get their order of possession. They've gone through and they've made sure that they've complied with those restrictions. So yeah, there's definitely some bad potential outcomes if you can't deliver that. But the nice part is the residential tenancy branch recognizes that's how the law operates, and they've given the landlords and the sellers orders that they need to deliver that possession on closing day.
So, and I've actually, and I've seen this three times, which to me makes it a trend. There's landlords now that are offering 2 months free rent for a mutual agreement and tenancy. And my guess is they're doing this to mitigate any risk and probably give a buyer certainty. It's probably the buyers pushing for this because they want vacant possession. They want to know that the tenant is going to leave and not dispute the notice. So I've seen this now three times where, and it might be the property manager pushing for it, but there seems to be people kind of aware of the complications around this, and they would rather just give 2 months rent versus 1 month's rent. I don't know if anyone else has seen that.
Well, if you've seen it three times.
Yeah.
So
it's happening.
No, it is happening. I do know, and we're kind of digging into this point specifically for a reason, right? This seems to be talked about an awful lot in the circles we're traveling in, and people are having issues and are nervous about it. I'm thinking somebody out there, Mark, is thinking, wait a second, how about we structure it this way? We have to give 3 months to the tenant. Why don't the buyers put the possession date 4 months out and there's a month buffer? Now, is that something that could potentially work?
Financing.
Yeah, as long as the financing comes together for the buyer, then yeah, absolutely. You want to give as much time as possible. If, you know, and that's maybe the only kind of negative of the legislation that as it sits so far. I mean, the government changed it from 4 months to 3 months, but that still makes it really tight for buyers and sellers when there's financing involved with that. You have that limited time to get your sale completed after financing is approved. It's not as good as there's still really huge potential for complications if there's a dispute and something gets extended and then suddenly there's an issue with financing.
And this has never, until recently, even been something I've thought about. But if I understand, then assuming financing is no issue or it's a cash buyer and they're moving in, there's the ability to have the tenant move out and it to sit vacant for a month or 2 months. Like, I'm just thinking about going back to this idea of, you know, we're evicting our tenant because we're moving in and, you know, you have to be there for a year. Is there a, that you know of, is there a time period there where it can sit vacant?
Yeah, absolutely. I would recommend you give as much wiggle room as you can possibly give yourself as a seller. The only thing you really have to think about is there's the Vancouver and the provincial vacancy and speculation taxes where it can't sit vacant for more than 6 months. But if you can give yourself an extra month, 6 weeks, 2 months of extra wiggle room, that sure, that's a long closing. But if you can give yourself as much wiggle room as possible, it will definitely make things easier for you and reduce the stress level a lot.
I remember one of the criticisms, and I'm just, this is, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here, but one of the criticisms of when this new extending the notice period came into play is we live in a market now where things can, like, you know, this market changes on a dime and it's very, things can change very quickly. And anytime you delay closings to a longer period of time, you run the risk of people wanting out of contracts for a variety of reasons, right? Life changes, but also concerns about, okay, well, now there's a tariff in place and the market's maybe not doing as well, or the economy or whatever it is that changes in the market and makes people want to get out of deals, right? On both sides, right? Have you noticed an uptick? Like, I don't know, we're very new to this regulation, but has there been any mention or anything suggesting that we're seeing more contracts, more frustrated contracts, I guess, in your space?
Yeah, I think that's, I've only been hearing that through the grapevine. But for us personally, we try and make sure things are really tight when we do this type of transaction, right? So for us, we've been able to make things move on time, but only through the grapevine I've heard there's a little bit of pullback from either buyers or sellers. Something's changed. But for us, we work really hard, keep things moving slowly. And I haven't experienced anything like that personally at our office.
Okay.
You know, going back to disputes, Mark, while we have you, what's the most effective way to document issues for potential disputes?
Lawyers love email. Always emails, not phone calls or text messages. You know, I've had someone come in who's been dealing exclusively through WhatsApp, and then I have to tell them they have to screenshot and print out 57 pages of their entire conversation string, right? It's not too many happy faces when I tell them that. Lawyers love emails, A, because it's easy to print out, and B, people love to put things in emails they shouldn't, right? It's 10 p.m., they're mad, they hit that send button, and it can make our lives pretty easy or really hard, but usually the former.
So sleep on it.
Exactly. Don't hit send after that one or two while watching the hockey game.
Sound advice.
Mark, maybe as a final question here, can't have you leave without a horror story. I know... Your lawyers always, I can't, you know, I mean, when I was younger, I used to think I I might have written the LSAT at one point and tried to go into law. But now when I think about how many things that must weigh on your mind, because you're usually, in many cases, you're dealing with when things have already gone south. Can you talk about maybe a horror story that you can share for our listeners?
Oh, everyone knows the classic horror story, right? The deal falls apart. Everybody sues everyone else. The lawsuit drags on for years. And I've read judgments where the award was close to $1 million for a lost property sale, where the buyer sues the seller or vice versa. In reality, it doesn't usually happen. Never say never. You know, there's people who will take advantage of a situation like that. But if there's a delay or a setback, there's going to be a cost involved in making sure the deal closes. But usually people want to get that deal past the finish line, and you can work together to get it done. And this is maybe the reason why hiring a lawyer can be real useful during a conveyance. You know, notaries can provide some legal advice if there's no adversarial relationship or conflict. But if things go south, they'll have to tell you that you need to go find a lawyer to help you figure things out. As a lawyer, I can do both. We do lots of smooth real estate transactions that go really well. But in the event that they don't go well, we can jump in immediately and try and resolve the issue. Or if that isn't possible, we can represent you as well. And we understand cost is always the common concern, right? I think I can confidently say you're not going to pay an extra 50% to have a law firm complete your conveyance. The difference is a lot smaller. But if it isn't, call me. But lawyers understand that we operate in a marketplace, right? And we try to charge a comparable fee to compete for your business. I think the real value there is in the types of situations that we've been talking about. A law firm can offer additional services like filing the residential tenancy branch application for you, getting the forms together from the buyer, you know, serving the documents professionally and attending the hearing to advocate for you. It can take a lot of stress out of what's a really stressful time, both getting the house sold, but also having this compound stress on top of it. And that's kind of our job in a way, right? You try and provide that peace of mind that these issues are taken care of.
You know, a wise lawyer once said to me, our letterhead goes a long way. I think it was you, Mark, that said that.
And that's the reality, right? Because it helps on more than one front, because you mentioned earlier that, yes, a seller can definitely go to the residential tenancy branch themselves. They can do all this themselves. But at the end of the day, a residential tenancy branch adjudicator has to look at what both sides are saying and try and judge them equally. And if there's any questions about something you've done, like say you're the person who filled out the service form, if they start to have questions about something, suddenly that starts getting questioned as well. And having someone independent who's signed and said, no, I'm a professional process server and I dropped it off on this date at this time, there's no question. And it just makes things that much easier. There's really a lot of benefit to having independent people who don't really have a stick in the game to really kind of bolster your case when you're in front of an adjudicator.
Great sound advice. Maybe we'll leave it there, Mark, but we do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Oh, happy to. Love the Five Wire, guys.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform. Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects. Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
Okay, so the first question is, if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say?
I think it would be a gigantic billboard next to Highway 1, and it would say, stop tailgating each other. That's how accidents happen and the bridge gets blocked. Because it's true. Yeah, every day you see an accident on that bridge and it's people tailgating each other in the HOV lane. Stop it.
Stop it. So you don't do accident law, I guess. Okay. So question number two, what is one of the best and most worthwhile investments you've ever made?
Honestly, the best thing I've invested in recently is probably my e-bike. It's so much fun. It's so easy. You don't get to the office sweaty. You know, you fly by traffic, you can haul stuff on it. And it's great. Best thing I've invested in this year. It's excellent.
I've heard that before. And it's funny. A lot of people that have them say they still do a lot of pedaling. So it's still like a net positive for health anyways, right?
Yeah. And sometimes you're tired. You just put it in max power mode and you barely do anything at all. It's fantastic. Just cruise along.
Nice. Okay. Question number three, Matt.
What is an unusual habit or absurd thing you love?
I think I'll go with absurd thing. And my new favorite absurd thing is there's a social media account called Art But Make It Sports. And that's where they compare a classic painting and a photograph of a sports event. And one that came out a little while ago was one of the Washington Commanders jumping over the line towards the end of that game, and it compares it with this man being held by the devil, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's completely absurd. It's my favorite new thing. Art But Make It Sports. It's great.
Is this on X.com or is this?
Yeah, it's on X. It's on Blue Sky. I think it's on Facebook. I think it's pretty easy to find, and it's super funny.
All right, awesome,
great one. In the last 5 years, what have you become better at saying no to?
These new ones are tough. You weren't kidding. I think I've gotten better at saying no to staying up and eating at 10 p.m. when I know I'll feel terrible the next morning. Does that make me a middle-aged person now?
Say no to yourself.
I think that's the definition. I think that's, I was thinking, as I was reading this question, I think that would be my answer too. I think saying no to things that unnecessarily keep you awake at ungodly hours.
The last thing you need to do is wake up your wife at 3 a.m. when you're getting up because you can't sleep from heartburn, guys. We're at that age now, right?
Last but not least, when you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
I go for a walk. You know, getting up from your computer, walking around a bit, just I like to say I do my best thinking in the shower, but honestly, just getting up, taking your mind off of things, you know, getting some fresh air, it's the best thing I could ask for in situations like that. So it's a big fan of that.
Amazing. Well, those are great answers to some real trash questions. So I think these are...
we're back to the drawing board? Or?
I'm going back to the drawing board. Another failed segment for if you're keeping tabs you talked about at the beginning of the conversation.
Like, we're like 6 for 6 this year on not having a 5-wire that works. No, those were great, Mark. And you're a quick thinker. You're a quick thinker.
Oh man.
How can people find out more about what you guys are doing, Mark?
Sure. So you can find us online at cedarcoastlaw.ca. Where our office is over in East Van. We love chatting with people. You know, even if we can't give a legal answer, we love hearing about your situation. So get in touch. We're happy to give assistance any way we can.
Amazing. Fantastic. Well, thanks again for taking the time, Mark. And that was a super useful conversation.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with partner over at Cedar Coast Law, Mark Trischuk.
Always great talking about the Residential Tenancy Act in a very, not only insightful way, but easily digestible way because it can get quite heavy getting into the details, the minutiae of what's going on between landlords and tenants these days.
Yeah, and just a plug, Mark is does do conveyancing, and he's a great lawyer, as I think came through in the conversation. So look him up. That was a fantastic talk. And like you said, great five wire.
For sure. Yeah, really enjoyed that. Matt, what else do we have for the day?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer with all the episodes, with stats, different types of stats. You can dig into sales ratios. You can dig into neighborhood stats and price point stats. There's really no reason. That, along with an assortment of other things on the LiveWire, there's no reason why you don't want to be on the LiveWire. That's for sure. We also have, of course, the button Buy With Us, where you can sign up for private client services. Adam, what's private client services all about?
Matt, this is the best way to look for real estate in the Lower Mainland. Private client services is a listings management software that gives you sold prices. It's updated often 36 to 72 hours before public MLS. And you can get your own free account to monitor the market at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
But just wait, click
buy with us.
I think, are you really ditching the power walking?
No, I'm not ditching. I'm just, I'm going a different angle. One episode out of 500. Do we got to highlight that? Do we got to highlight that?
No. That's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And you just click buy with us and you can, maybe not power walk, but you can definitely see listings before
anyone else. And here's the other thing I want to mention, because if you're looking for new construction, we've also got SkytrainCondo.ca. That's SkyTrain Condo Living, which is our site, which features, it catalogs all the new construction around SkyTrain lines throughout the Lower Mainland. So if you're interested in monitoring new up-and-coming construction in the best locations in the region, check it out. We've got some new projects there today. I'm just scrolling through right now. Vera in Langley, Unity in Langley. Quite a few Langley projects just at the top. But Langley's fantastic. So,
You know what? Langley's hot right now. I think there's we should say, we're highlighting along SkyTrain lines, but also the new Surrey Langley SkyTrain extension as well. So if you're looking for that SkyTrain bump in 2029, head over to skytraincondo.ca.
Fantastic. And Matt, how can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out?
You can get in touch with me at any point, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We'll have a great week and we're back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.